I am Jason Lytle, and I am representing the band Granddaddy.
You know, if anybody was going to represent the band, right? If we were talking like politics here, you'd be a good representative for Granddaddy, right?
I'm pretty qualified.
Yeah, you are. We know that there's Modesto, California, 1992. Four albums split in 2006. Fame, fortune, money from licensing. I mean, just endless, amazing stuff. I'm going to start with the goofy question. Is there something that in all these years, you say, I have no idea why no one has ever asked me that?
Not really. I mean, that almost alludes to, you know, thinking that I'm one of those people that love answering questions. If anything, it's like, it's the problem I've always had with doing interviews and talking about, you know, my work or talking about the albums is that it's being asked questions, and it's like this one-sided sort of thing. It's not, and I've kind of been misconstrued, I guess, a few times as being somebody who doesn't, you know, who's just not into that whole part of it. But if anything, the problem I have is that it's not this communal thing. It's like this one-sided, it's like this lopsided. And I don't know, I would rather have a conversation with a stranger, you know, about just, you know, the simplest things and just kind of take in all the little nuances of that than just be asked questions.
I want to have we have to cover some stuff. Look, you put out a record, right? So the purpose is to talk about it. But I totally agree with you that, you know, what underwear are you wearing today isn't really something that when you meet somebody in a bar or just going on a date or whatever it is, that's not the first thing you talk about.
Well, I mean, already right off the bat, it makes a huge difference, you know, being in the room with a person. I don't think you've met a person who despises being on the phone more than I do, too, which is another thing.
Me too.
Well, there's this thing, too, and I don't know when the last time you've actually talked on a landline is, but it's so velvety and buttery, and it sounds so nice. And it's
these are terrible. There's no frequency response in these things.
Well, not only that, but you have a crappy little speaker, you know, and it's usually getting conferenced in, and then the person is listening in a crappy little, you know, it's just all this crappy audio. And if anything, I think more than anything, it's the crappy audio that puts me off.
I joke that this is the new transistor radio. Like getting out of Modesto, a lot of your here's a conversation piece, right? You got out. You go to Montana. You go another place, and then you go, oh wait a minute, I think I need to go back. So you know the whole thing about getting out of a place, and you know growing up there, getting out of. But on the list of 25 places in California that people go, you know, I'm not going to take my tour bus there. Modesto might be somewhere there. But what a trip, right? Because now you're kind of like, well, you know, life's changing, relationships changing. Maybe I'll go back home to the place I wanted to get the hell out of.
I got to tell you, I'm at a point right now where I really need, you know, I've been out of California after having grown up here and in that region. I've been gone for over a decade, and I loved Montana. Bozeman specifically is where I was. But and then I ended up in Portland, and that was, you know, due to a decision that I was, you know, trying to make myself and somebody else happy, and that whole thing fell apart. So I kind of got to this point in my personal life where I really needed, I mean, it's hard to explain. I really needed this familiarity, you know, the light, the smell, and going into a grocery store, and for better or for worse, it's like, these are my people, you know. And it's kind of amazing right now because I spend an inordinate amount of time, you know, out in the country still. And this is the terrain that I used to, you know, run all over the place when I was a little kid. It's like, it's so familiar, and it's so good for me right now.
It's comforting,
and
right?
Yeah. And I actually got to finish the record there, which was I couldn't have predicted it, you know, kind of shaping up like that. But I had the whole thing about 80% of the way done. And then I knew that I needed to leave Portland and come back to California, but I didn't know where I was going to end up. But for logistical reasons in the band, I decided on Modesto, and I was just kind of like laughing the whole time I was doing it. But it's Actually, the experiment is going well right now. It's not too bad. And I'm a little bit on the outskirts though too, so I don't really go into town too much.
You're not there where they're popping wheelies and they're doing the American graffiti thing downtown with the cars bouncing in the hole.
Yeah, it's a strange.
How many Pontiacs, right?
I have a tough time explaining it to especially people, abroad. It's just. It's a tough one to try to define how Modesto is in the scheme of like California.
We're in a bar. Let's talk about money. The perception will be, oh, wait a minute, it's him and Granddaddy. Then the money's flowing like the rain, right?
I've been really fortunate to work with the same manager who actually managed Granddaddy as well. But I've been working with him steadily for over 10 years now, and
Rare.
He has allowed me to, and there was, the lean years, he was there throughout all of it and just kind of making sure, and he has, all kinds of other clients, but I was just, I don't know, it helps that money wasn't a huge goal of mine, and I never had a whole, I wasn't trying to get back or, I didn't have relatives that I didn't have anything to live up to. If anything, I was destined for probably jail or a factory job or something. I didn't go to college. I was just like, I kind of rolled the dice and I was like, all right, this is it. No safety net. I'm just going to try this music thing. And, but money wasn't at the front of it. It was because I fell in love with, what I do and I had this passion for it. And then it became, I don't know, everything just kind of became what it was with Granddaddy. And then it was just like, well, in order to keep doing this, we have to generate money. And then luckily there was that time, there was that period of the industry where there was still some money. And,
as opposed to today.
Yeah.
We were talking about this morning,
Although, I mean, it really has played into, this round, we have something like, I don't know, it's kind of a long story, but I never thought that I'd be on tour again, but we have, there's a new way of doing it, and we're more efficient, and I've been promised that we won't, there's not a lot of the old mistakes, it's kind of a different, it's a different game altogether, and,
Well, back even in the last time, there was not the words album cycle were not in the vernacular, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the younger artists, they're like, well, we've got to tour behind this for a year and a half because we've got to match the album cycle and the release of the singles. And I'm like, who told you this?
Yeah, I couldn't find a way to get out of it. I couldn't find a way. It was like this. And luckily, it was the end of, that period where it was like, this might be a good time to get out, because there's no more money. And we had a pretty good ride. We had a pretty good run. And a lot of people, asked me if I feel bad that we were always on the verge of greatness and we didn't make it. And I was like, no, we went so much further than I ever thought we would ever go. I think that we were very lucky and very fortunate to have gone as far as we did.
And then there's today, 30th Century, Danger Mouse, a Columbia imprint. I mean, so it's kind of like you got the I'll do it in the full announcer voice. You've got the freedom, and yet you've got the big label, but the big label has to pay attention to the freedom because your contract ain't with them.
I think it's a pretty ideal situation. I'm actually pretty good pals with Brian Burton, and he knows how I am, and he's kind of like that too. He's like Mysterioso, and he's very much about the art and very much about the creative part of it, and he's been a pretty good buffer, to where he's like, all right, this is Jason's deal, and so I don't like meeting whole new teams of people and stuff. I kind of get to do my thing. I get to bring my band, my old friends back into the fold, and we get to play these shows and we get to make some money and make a lot of people happy. And it's kind of an ideal, if I can just keep my head on straight, it's kind of an ideal situation.
So let's talk about keeping your head on straight. Because we've all been through a lot of stuff, right? And you do sit in bars and you talk to people and you either tell them the truth or you don't tell them the truth. Distribution of workload. I love that expression because you used that expression when you were talking about this and the whole idea of how you distribute the workload to make sure that the fun stays up front. And that relates to, look, I mean, I don't know anybody in these businesses. Well, I know a few, but man, they're weird, who haven't been through all sorts of stuff. And we can throw out all the versions of stuff we want, whether it's substance abuse or, you know, going away for a while. I mean, it seems that that is what a true artist needs to go through.
Sounds like
you've made it through the other side now. And whether the head, is the head ever really going to be on straight? And is that really relevant?
It's going to be what it's going to be. But I think the problem that I had, and the problem that is probably the case with a lot of people, is just being able to hear yourself, being able to recognize the signs, or just like getting the hints and going, uh-oh, this is happening. Are you ready? Or because I think, yeah, and that's just a growing older thing. That's just repetition. And that's just, no, I don't want to keep banging my head here against the wall, you know, in the same spot. This hurts. I'm going to stop doing it and learning from that. And then, spending enough time with enough clarity, you know, to where you can sort of start learning from these.
Function.
Yeah. And maybe evolve a little bit, you know, God forbid. I don't know. It was just clarity has been a big one. Cause I wasn't really interested in clarity for a while. I couldn't really hear myself think anymore there for a while, especially towards the end of the whole granddaddy thing.
I think sometimes when you're clear, you don't even hear yourself think, and other people have to come to you and say, hey, you know what you're doing? Yeah. So you got to make this record yourself again. This is gorgeous. So you made it yourself, and I know you made it yourself because I can hear the synth sounds. I know the stuff that's you. Did it get mixed? Who mixed it finally? Who took it and did the final?
It was actually a good pal of mine who has an amazing studio in Portland. His name is Tucker Martin, but I mixed it alongside him. It was kind of a tag team. Well, it was his studio, his skills, you know, running the console. And
but your hands were heavy on.
Yeah, well, we would work in phases, you know. But that's how I like to do it. That's how I've probably done like the last, you know, four or five. I'm so involved and I'm mixing along the way as I'm recording it and stuff. And so it's pretty focused. It's pretty where it's going to be like when I get into the mix room, but we just sort of start expanding and improving upon all the rough mixes. And so if they're really happening, if they're really feeling good and sounding good in the rough mixes, and then I'm super excited because I know they're just going to get that much more expansive and that much more interesting when we get them.
So are you happy with it?
I am, and I'm very, very relieved I'm able to say that.
Losing everything, living on top of a big box store. I mean, just the visual of that. And we're in San Francisco, where there are 6,700 homeless. I mean, the homeless problem in this city, from when I moved here in 89, is off the charts. It's outrageous. So the concept of living at the top of a big box store, and I heard you talking about, you know, even going shopping. This song, and I'm like, you know, maybe we should take all the homeless people and put the tents on top of all the Targets and the IKEAs. Yeah. And maybe we can solve the world's problems. Maybe this is a political solution you've come up with here.
It would smell a lot better. It was the whole idea for that song. Just all it took was an electric door, you know, to go open for
it's
me.
It's the gateway to hell, right?
Waft of that smell, and then like the song just like materialized like within moments.
Okay, but I just have to go here. And the last 30 seconds of the video is just absolutely positively one of the most, I don't want to say fun things because I don't want to be evil, but I'm evil. It's really fun because, and again, I'm not going to give it away for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, but man, talk about murdering the dream.
Yeah, that pretty
I'm
much.
Depressed, I'm depressed, I'm happy, and then, Okay.
It made the video for me. I mean, that was the clincher.
How did that come to be? Because it's just so. And you know, for people who don't stick to the very end, I reposted and I said, please, wait till it fades out and stay for the end.
Yeah. No, that's the other thing. You know, you get the
bonus point.
You get the reward if you actually, you know, if you actually watch it until the very end. But yeah, I don't know. It was almost something too cute and sort of like, I don't know. It just like it made it like that. Yeah.
Can you identify any of the filters that make a granddaddy song? Like when you went back and said, okay, I'm writing granddaddy songs, were there any filters that you in your head said, you know, this is a granddaddy song, that's not a granddaddy song?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because I was very aware of that throughout this whole process. And I've said this often, but I took myself back to granddaddy school. In order for me to do that, you know, enough time had to go by where I could kind of like go back and listen to it. And it almost, I mean, I probably was a much different person. You know, there's a lot of stuff. I've often said that, you know, most of what I'm trying to do is just, you know, recapture this feeling of wonder that I had with music when I was 8 years old. So that part of it's always going to be there. That's always going to be there. But it was more than anything, I think it was nice for me to be able to listen to Granddaddy and not just get squirmy and not just, you know, have all this. I guess enough time has gone by to where I've shed a lot of the, you know, just I can listen to it like anybody else can listen to it. And having all, you know, acquired all these skills in the studio and having endless options, you kind of do have to set a few parameters. And for me, it was just like, all right, I'm going to try to make this sound like a granddaddy song.
And I think it's those weird, I have to say, I think it's the weird synth sounds that that define so many of these too.
And I'm happy you said weird synth sounds, because I had a good friend of mine.
And I mean that as a compliment, of course.
Yeah, well, he said one of the things that he liked about Granddaddy back then was that they weren't always like these wacky just for the sake of.
Not at all.
He said he could kind of tell that they were sort of placed very strategically. Oh, yeah. And they were and he had to, I had to be reminded of that, you know. I had to be of how much time, how much toil used to go into trying to fit in these unique sounds and actually have them not be perceived as like, oh, he's dazzling us with like some weird new, you know, thrift store keyboard run through, you know, 18 pedals. And it's like, I actually really tried hard to incorporate these strange synth sounds and make them work and actually make them emotive.
You mean like Lost Machine, where it starts in totally chaos and then suddenly becomes beautiful?
Yeah, I like that.
Right? It's super chaotic and you're like, you know, as the kids say, WTF. And then it just, you know, it's kind of like, I always use the analogy, you're jumping into the deep end of the pool and someone forgot to put the water in. And then just before you hit, somebody has this super hose and it's full and you can swim. That's what that song's like for me, because it's like, uh-oh, I'm about to hit bottom. This is not good. And then, man, isn't the world gorgeous?
Yeah, that was a tough one, you know. It's pulling off a chaotic 6 minute long song and having it not feel like 6 minutes is always a big challenge. But it was a good one. That one, I'm really happy with the way that one turned out.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside, and then you get to play anything in between.